Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by you guys. Initially, it looked like it sounded like I was going to be joined by Avery because she was screaming and fighting, going to bed about as hard as she ever has. But fortunately, she calmed down. We got her to kind of relax a little bit, and she was able to go down. So fortunately, you guys don't have to hear that. Today's show is just like every other show, every other Monday show, going to be a mailbag show. The questions, we have a few of them. We have enough to get through today. But if you guys want any subject, and this is the time to have some fun with it. It doesn't have to be basketball. It doesn't have to be sports even. If you guys have any question or comment or whatever, put it in the iTunes review or another safe way to get it in is obviously if you're a Patreon subscriber, if you are, if you have the email, LakersLockedOn@gmail.com, you could send your question in there. My personal email that I have on Twitter is at this point pretty much shot. I can't lie. Getting through to those is pretty tough with the amount of spam that I'm hit with on those. But if you really want a question on here and you aren't an iTunes subscriber or something like that, then leave it, shoot me an email at LakersLockedOn@gmail.com and I'll try to get to that one. Like I said, though, before we even get to the questions, I guess we should really quickly update. Apparently, President Trump hopped on a call with the commissioners of the various sports leagues and, told Commissioner Goodell of the NFL that, he thinks that league might be able to start on time. It's not too hard to connect the dots here between his, most fervent, voting base and the NFL sharing a lot in common. So I could kind of see why they might, take priority here. Adam Silver did ask, apparently, he reportedly asked Trump if the NBA could take some precedent here, seeing as they were one of the first major corporations to start shutting stuff down. And that's made Trump's job easier. Again, though, if you just kind of follow how Trump does business, he's going to focus on the people that, rubs his back, and the NBA has been pretty vocally against him. So I would imagine he's not going to do too much to help the NBA out. We'll see, though. I'm still somewhat optimistic after all of this, though, that the NBA might be able to finish this season off. And you know what? I'll tell you why. I have learned by way of research and by talking to some people that the NBA really desperately needs at least these playoffs to go on. And I think what I find more likely to happen, like the likeliest scenario that I see happening here, is they play some kind of, they play the last few games to get everybody ready and get everybody in a shape for the playoffs, and then they play some kind of truncated playoff, series or set of series, and they are willing to go further into the summer to be able to get that done, and then push the start of next year back, have another shortened regular season next year, and get back on to what is a more normal schedule, right? Start in October, finish in June, July, or whatever, or June, and then you have like a month off, and then you have the draft and yada yada yada, right? I think kind of that's the likeliest scenario here. If I had to put money on anything, that I think the NBA, if it just so happens that it will never be safe for them to play this year, then, everybody's safety is the top priority. But if they are able to resume some kind of action, I think in terms of what's more important to everybody involved is this year's postseason and then next year's, trying to start next year on time. You saw Dame Lillard tweet that Players wouldn't be interested in starting in December and then playing through the summer. Apparently, players really like to have their, you know, normal summer vacation, basically. So the idea that they would play this season later into the summer or even into the very early fall and then start next year around Christmas and then just have that become the normal schedule, I don't see that happening. Or at least I don't see that happening without some negotiation. I think what's a more likely scenario here is you have them play into the late summer, early fall here for this season. Start next year around Christmas, but it'll be a shortened season next year so that they can finish the 2021 NBA season around the normal time and then resume the usual schedule. Now, they would obviously have to figure out some kind of they would have to negotiate a bit to be able to figure out how they're going to make it work with two straight shortened seasons and lowered revenue or the lowered revenue that would result from that. But I think just from what I've heard and what everybody is really kind of prioritizing here, if they're going to try to figure out a way to play games, the top priority is going to be to finish off this year, play, get to the playoffs, reap some of the reward from the playoff revenue, and then handle the next year or the year after that even as best they can. But I think if there are going to be games, I think they are going to focus on this current season's giving somebody the championship trophy or having somebody earn the championship trophy, and then trying to figure out the math from that point forward. But again, the top priority for everybody, whether it's the NBA or for us just as normal civilians, is to be safe. And the sooner that we are collectively as safe as we have to be so that we can get through this all together, the sooner we can kind of resume some of the normalcy that I think we all miss. We'll see, though. Let's take a quick second. When we come back, I'm going to answer your guys' questions. All right, the first question here comes from KCP's Anklet. It's probably my favorite name of everybody who asks questions. Anthony and Pete. Anthony, I can't believe you chose Brian Cook over Tyler Ennis as your most hated Laker. You hated that guy. My question is, how do you think Lamar Odom would be used in today's game? Do you think teams would play him at the five for small ball lineups for extended time or run a point forward like LeBron? I feel like he was a decade ahead of his time and would have been perfect for a lot of teams in today's game. Well wishes and stay safe. Same back at you. All right, so the Brian Cook thing, what you guys have to keep in mind is I am, I guess, more objective in my analysis or in my fandom right now than I was back when Brian Cook was playing. I was just a fan back then. I was I was an insane fan. I was a fanatic. So I was more passionate in my hatred of Brian Cook than I was of Tyler Ennis. Now, with that said, the annoyance that Tyler Ennis was, it's like, what's your least favorite sports team between for an LA fan between the Celtics and the San Francisco Giants? Like, I hate both those. I hate both those teams. I'm not really a fan of either of those players. And so for Tyler Ennis, obviously what annoyed me was that he wasn't very good. And he also played as if he was good from an effort standpoint. Brian Cook, same kind of thing. He wasn't very good. And I'm not sure I ever saw that guy sweat or dive on the floor or anything like that. And, you know, for some of the for both those guys, some of the stuff they have in common is why I didn't particularly like watching them play basketball. I want to be clear here and say that, you know, I'm saying I didn't like those guys as basketball players. I don't know any, you know, I've never met either, talked to either guy. I've heard that Brian Cook was an insanely nice guy or is an insanely nice guy. So, like, you know, that's all kind of goes without saying. I'm just talking about these guys as basketball players. But when Brian Cook was playing, I was especially hateful, or I was especially I especially disliked him because my level of passion, just raw passion towards the Lakers, was different than it is right now. Let's go to the next question. Oh, I gotta talk about Lamar Odom. So I hear this a lot, and I think in theory a lot of this is true about Odom, that a big who could handle the ball the way that he did, could rebound the way that he did, could shoot, you know, the way that he did. Now, he wasn't a great shooter, and he would have to change some stuff if he was really going to rely on his three-point shot. But a guy as talented as Lamar Odom was would just translate really well to today's game. And I think, physically speaking, that's basically inarguable. But, like, I don't think what held Lamar back from really kind of opening up or reaching the heights of his talent when he was playing wasn't that. I don't think that was so much the era that he played in, but I think it was more the his approach to the sport or his approach as a professional. I've never met the guy. Lamar is one of my favorite Lakers of all time. So I don't want to besmirch the guy personally when I don't really know him. I don't know him personally at all. But I do think, you know, the same stuff that would sometimes drive you insane if you were rooting for a Lamar Odom team, the inconsistency, the, you know, the night to night, I don't know what he's going to bring mentally. Aspect of Lamar's game, like if that remained the same right now as it was back then he would probably be much of the same player. You know, probably stats would be beefed up a bit because it's a different kind of game nowadays compared to when he played in his prime. But a lot of the stuff that, you know, was frustrating as a Lamar Odom fan would have been just as frustrating right now. So I do think, and you know, somebody asked, there's another version of this question in a bit, you know, what would a Lamar Odom team look like if it was just built around Lamar Odom? I don't think it'd be very good, because night to night, the team's best player, we don't know if he was actually going to show up. I mean, when you really think about it, the reason why Lamar flourished the way that he did on the Lakers with Kobe and Powell was because on any given night, he could be the team's best player, second best player, third best player, fourth best player, some nights fifth best player, right? And, you know, if he decided he was going to show up and have it, then cool. If there was a matchup that he could take advantage of, then cool. The Lakers could reap those rewards. But, you know, when Lamar was the second best player on the Lakers and was, you know, it was expected of him to be the Lakers' second best player, he struggled because that mentally, he didn't approach the game in the way that you need a team's second best player to approach it. Now, maybe with all that said, maybe he takes the game more seriously because more is being, you know, the game opens itself up more for him in today's era than it did back then. But so long as Odom showed some of the same, and I for lack of a better term, immaturity — I don't want to call him immature because he went through so much that he's probably far more mature in a lot of ways than I am or I ever will be — but in terms of the way that he approached basketball and the way that he approached his career in the NBA, if he carried a lot of that approach over to today's era, he would probably be much of the same player, a very good player. And I was thinking about this over the weekend because they played the 2010 Game 7 on ESPN the other night. And I was thinking of like, all right, where does he rank for favorite Lakers of all time, right? You got Kobe, you got Nick Van Exel, you got Magic, right, as a player. I don't really know if there are many players beyond that that I could just definitively say, maybe Powell, right? But beyond that, I don't know if there are many players that I could just definitively say that is my favorite, you know, I like that player more as a Laker than I did Lamar. He was an incredible Laker, and he's seems like a really, really great person who has fallen on some of the hardest times that any human has ever really fallen on. And you know, I really feel for the guy given some of the stuff that he has gone through, but you know, he was limited by his own approach to professionalism, and you know, if that's how he approaches being a pro now, then a lot of those same frustrations would carry over. I'm sorry. I know I'm rambling, and I'm rambling just because I want to make sure that you guys are clear on the fact that I really, really liked Lamar Odom, and I really don't want to come across as I'm slamming Lamar Odom, but, you know, he was at times frustrating, and it was never, like, I never felt like he was being held back by his era so much as I felt like he was being held back by himself. So, let's take a quick second. When we come back, I'll wrap up with a few more of your questions. All right, the next question here comes from a name I am not going to say out loud. I've been caught doing that before. I'm not going to do that again. Excuse me. Hey, guys, thanks for doing a great job of lightening the mood in podcast form. I have some quick hitters and one longer-winded question. One, favorite Caruso nickname, the Bald Eagle. Not only is that my favorite Alex Caruso nickname, but I really think that might be one of the better nicknames across the NBA. Number two, current Laker you'd like to have lunch with? You know, if LeBron was going to be completely forthright, you know, and he and I, like the scenario that I asked Pete about earlier, you know, I think that was on Friday's show, where, you know, you have somebody, you go out for a meal, and that person is just completely honest, everything is off the record, and they treat the meal as such. I think LeBron is probably the pretty clear answer here. Other than that, like guys that I see that I feel like are really, you know, seem like a cool hang. Like Jared Dudley is legitimately funny to me. Like just like straight up, not athlete funny, not, you know, they say something and chuckle, and then everybody in the scrum around them laughs way too hard because, you know, athletes are graded on a curve in terms of their humor. I find Jared Dudley legitimately funny, and that's with him dunking on me over the weekend on Twitter. So yeah, that either LeBron, completely honest LeBron, or Jared Dudley. And by the way, I'm saying honest, not like as if his dishonesty would be pejorative. I'm somebody in that with that kind of stature, with as much to lose as LeBron has, shouldn't be completely forthright about everything. That would be an insane expectation. But I mean, like if we were in that setting and I asked LeBron a question, and he was just completely open and honest, then I think that'd be really interesting. He's a fascinating guy. Number three, favorite current non-Laker. I think Dame Lillard is probably at the top of my list right now. I just really like the way that he approaches the game. He plays the same position I played back in the day. Isn't incredibly entertaining. Is by all accounts one of like the absolute best leaders in the sport. Like you talk to anybody who covers any team, and then I have some friends who work, you know, with and around the Blazers as well, and they'll say that like Dame is just different. So I really respect that about him. And then the last question, lastly, if you could pick a year for the Lakers to win a title that they didn't, but had to take away two other titles, which years would you pick? Had to be in the 80s or has to be in the 80s or more recently. I mean, if I have to take two titles away, I mean, I guess like if I could take away, you know, like a couple Minnesota titles and get back, like have the Lakers win the championship in 08. I think that's the trade. That's the obvious trade here. Don't get me wrong. 2008 is maybe one of my favorite Lakers seasons of all time, given like the ups and downs and everything that everybody went through in watching that. But if they could beat the Celtics that year, and by the way, like if they win that season, if they win that championship, that means that super annoying big three group of Paul Pierce and Kendrick Perkins, like we wouldn't have to hear from them right now. They would just be some like complete laughing stock that nobody would really want to hear from, other than talking about how great a disappointment they were as a big three. So that'd be nice. That'd be really cool. Also, you know, in 08, we watched this again. I'm bringing up the 2010 Game 7 that was played on ESPN over the weekend. But I was watching that, and Rasheed Wallace played out of his freaking mind. He was so damn well. I wouldn't say so damn good, because there were some, like later in the game when he got tired, he was running basically 3-point line to 3-point line. So like obviously there was a trade-off there, but offensively he did things that Kendrick Perkins never would have been able to do. And given how offensively challenged both teams were, Rasheed Wallace made a much greater impact in that game than Perkins ever could have if given the same opportunity. So you know, I was watching that and I was kind of just like laughing at the idea that people, Celtics fans, will like seriously look you in the eye and say, "Oh, but if we only had Kendrick Perkins," and I'm just like, all right, fine. A, it's an asinine point to make, but B, if you're going to make that point, then you then have to turn around and let me tell you, well, if the Lakers have a healthy Andrew Bynum and a healthy Trevor Ariza, in 08, then they probably beat you guys then too, and we would never have to hear from your annoying ass team ever again. That 08 is you know, and again, it's still one of my favorite seasons of all time, not just for the Lakers, but in professional sports. But that's one that if they could have won that championship, and even if that means, so they won, actually they would have gone back-to-back-to-back, right? So if they would have won that championship and then had a second three-peat for Kobe, then, yeah, everything is different. That's a pretty easy, you know, I'll take that championship and give up two of the championships that the Lakers won back in Minnesota. Let's go one more question here. Vegas Richard writes, "Hey Anthony and Pete, I hope every time I write a record, I write a review, it counts towards your overall rating. If not, I'm sorry for all the questions." No, they actually do. They keep tracking. So if you guys are asking multiple questions, then great, keep them coming. I was watching some Laker games from the Kobe Powell era, and it got me thinking of past or even some current Lakers who maybe haven't gotten the credit they deserve. I always think of Powell and Derek Fisher when it comes down to the subject. Could you guys talk about these two Laker legends and some others you could think of? Thanks, Richard in Las Vegas. So, look, Powell not getting the credit he deserves. The only people who aren't giving Powell the credit he deserves are basketball Neanderthals. Like, they do not deserve the time of day. So if you ever hear somebody besmirching Powell or anything like that for any reason, just tune them out. It's not even worth the time that it would take to tell them to shut up, right? Just tune them out. Let's move on. But for Derek Fisher, Fisher's an interesting one because we are, you know, Fisher basically proceeded or was, you know, was in his prime at the time when the NBA was moving to this incredible era of point guards. He played against Chris Paul, played against Deron Williams, played against Jason Kidd. You know, those guys then paved the way, played against Steve Nash, played against like, all these incredible point guards. And then you see it nowadays, right? You still see Chris Paul in the league, but now you have, you know, we've seen Derrick Rose's career take place. We're seeing what Trae Young looks like he might be able to do in Atlanta, right? Steph Curry obviously needs to be mentioned amongst all these point guards. And I think because of that, we have this kind of weird blind spot for the importance of the 3-and-D point guard, because you kind of go down that list of all-time great point guards, and as easy as it is to just say, like, yeah, those guys are just obviously valuable, look at the number of championships that their teams have won. Steph Curry won his championships, but also Kevin Durant showed up. Steve Nash, no championships. Chris Paul, no championships. Darren Williams, no championships. Damian Lillard, no championships, right? All these just incredible, Derrick Rose, no championships. All these incredible basketball talents. And I'm not saying that this is the only way to value or to determine value for guys is whether or not they won championships. But you know, I don't think we give enough credit to the point guards that fulfilled an important role on championship-level teams. So the Derek Fishers of the world, who allowed Kobe to be Kobe, while also, you know, never really kind of letting him down when he was asked to step up, like, those are important players. The point guards alongside, like, you know, Matthew Dellavedova is a bit of a joke or whatever, but, you know, him just kind of stepping up and being a viable point guard when he was playing alongside LeBron. Now, obviously, Kyrie Irving was the much better talent there. But just, I would much rather have kind of, I don't want to say a game manager, because that means they have the ball a ton. But if I was designing a team, I would much rather have a ball-dominant wing and then a 3-and-D point guard than I would try to build around a point guard who is making max NBA dollars. I think when your point guard is making max NBA dollars, it's really difficult to make that work cap-wise and still have a completely maximized team. I think right now we're in the era of wings where it's LeBron, Giannis, Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard. Before them, you know, Kobe was, you know, obviously more of a shooting guard, but he could play the wing as well, right? Like, give me, we basically went from bigs, you know, Shaq, Duncan, Kareem, etc., to this stretch where we had incredible point guard play, but I think we kind of overlooked who was winning championships while all this was going on. It's been LeBron, it's been Kevin Durant, it's been Kawhi Leonard, it'll be Giannis eventually. Right, give me the point guards that can fill in a role and allow my wings, the bigger players, to be able to be the better players or the more important or valuable players, and I think you're going to have a better overall team. That's not to say that, like Steph Curry is obviously a hugely, hugely important player, and one could even say that, you know, to a certain extent, the spacing that he gave Kevin Durant is like the nth degree example of a not 3-and-D point guard, but a point guard whose gravity opens up the game without him having to dominate the ball a bunch for you know, somebody like Kevin Durant on the court. That to me is a point guard I would much rather build around than, you know, the Chris Pauls or the Steve Nashes, who have to have the ball in their hands for lengthy stretches at a time for that team's offense to tick fully. Those point guards just don't tend to be good enough defensively to be that team's best player, in my opinion. I might be wrong, though. Let me know if I'm wrong. It's definitely happened before. It'll continue to happen moving forward. That's going to do it for this episode of the Lockdown Lakers podcast, though. It's good to get back into recording on a Sunday night for you guys to be able to listen to this on a Monday morning or whenever you guys take this in. I hope you guys are continuing to be really safe out there as we continue to try to get through all this together. And then Pete and I will be back. We've already decided we are going to deep dive into Chick Hearn for tomorrow's show. So that's going to be really, really good. You aren't going to want to miss that. Have a great rest of your day. Be safe out there. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.